Good afternoon, second service. We're finishing up our study today of 2 Timothy. And as we draw to a close, I was thinking, we kind of had our conclusion last week, that as Jay shared with us, we had at the beginning of chapter 4 kind of a final charge that Paul makes to Timothy, telling him what to do, to preach the word, to rebuke, to exhort, to go out there and hold to the truth, to do it with gentleness and with patience. And then what we get this week is a little different. This is more like the credits. This is like the liner notes to the album. This is like the thank you, thank you, thank you to those. This is kind of who he's dedicating things to. Some last minute details that he gives to Timothy. And I was thinking about this, that I was remembering as a kid, you know, you used to buy albums. Now people just buy songs, right? But you used to buy albums or you'd buy a record, and included in that would be in the back kind of these liner notes of people that they wanted to thank. And as a kid, I always read those. Is there anybody else here that would actually read? Okay, because the thing is, you find out something kind of rich in those. You see that the kind of the humanity of these people that have put together the album. You see the relationships, the things that are significant, the like little, you know, nicknames for so-and-so or whatever it is that they kind of spotlight there, kind of afforded this unique almost window into the soul of the person writing those notes. And I think in a similar way, as I was reading through this last section, I thought, gosh, you really hear Paul. That we've been hearing Paul in the message, we've been hearing Paul in the charge, we've been hearing his passion and his call to ministry. But there's, I think, something unique that we hear as he starts recounting these connections with people, these relationships. Some of those are people that he deeply misses. Some are people where the relationships are broken and he's suffering. Some are like even these wounds that he's currently experiencing. And yet in all of this, you hear not so much what he's saying, but maybe how he's feeling, how it starts to kind of pour out through the cracks. And I love that. Sometimes I think this speaks in a way that's even more weighty to us. And as we look at this, as we see his heart, I think that we see some of the most meaningful things in humanity. You know, I was thinking about Jay's assignment to us last week, and Jay was saying, as we're listening to this final charge, what would yours be? Did anybody give that some thought? What would your charge be? What would you say as he's mentioning his brother on his deathbed, able to speak these words of affirmation to his children? And I was thinking, gosh, what would I say? And thinking about it, gosh, that wouldn't be hard. If I was sitting there looking at Gabe, I would say, be you. Be yourself. Be that kid that is just so great. Be that person I see in you. And then just spend your life on other people. Generously spend all of that, pour that out on others. But I think as somebody and kind of at the midpoint of life, those words, that advice comes back on me. Jeff, how are you doing in that? That, and is my parenting of my children calling that out in them? And I was looking at this last week and thinking, gosh, you know, what was I really saying underneath it all to my kids all last week? And probably more than be yourself and more than spend your life on others, I was probably saying to my kids, get A's. Find out what you're good at and practice that and do it well, because that's where your worth in life is, right? This is how you're going to survive in life. This is how you're going to navigate. Now, I was saying those things most likely because if I didn't, they would just sit on the couch and check their Instagram or play Flappy Fish or whatever. So we need this. Hey, get in the game and engage. But I think oftentimes we realize that that the counsel that we give falls short of a story big enough to like pour our lives into. And I think it's sometimes at the end of our life where we realize, oh, no. The story that we are meant to live is much bigger. To define ourselves by our accomplishments and our successes, these are things that don't bring true happiness, don't bring true meaning out of life. I was listening to a talk recently by this girl, Brené Brown. Has anybody heard her talk on vulnerability on TED? Yeah, I'm like one of the last guys to this party. I looked down and there's like 16 million views on this. And I was thinking, how have I never heard of her before? But she, in this talk, gives just this beautiful talk on vulnerability. And it was like at one of these like little side hosted things in Houston that turns out that it went viral. And speaking on vulnerability, I think that gives us a clue to the human condition and just how deeply vulnerability is a part of our lives. She posits this thing at the start, and I always think this is interesting, when somebody makes kind of a blanket statement that goes unquestioned, but she says, it's connection that gives our lives meaning. And she just says it, and everybody goes, yep. She goes, you know, that's how we're neurologically wired, that's how, like, life is, right? But she doesn't even need to defend it. Everybody sort of nods. That real meaning in life is found in connection. It just is. It's not some inner thought or epiphany that we have, some deeper enlightenment. It's found somehow in relationship. Lewis says this in The Four Loves. He says, 9 out of 10 of your deepest moments are going to be found in the affection between you and another. I think this is why it says scripturally that where two or more are gathered, there I am also, God says. Not like God is waiting on the outside going, who's there? Is there two or more? Okay, I guess I'll show up, right? That God is there in our aloneness, but there's some unique way in relationship, in connection, where God presents himself in a way that brings deep, deep meaning, deep joy, deep happiness. I love this about Lewis and his friends. I think that's one of the things I'm drawn to about him. I'm going to go ahead and put this quote up, the first one there, Josh, if we got it. This to me was so inspiring. In fact, this when my wife and I traveled to Oxford, we went to this place where he would meet with his friends because he casts just to me the deepest vision for friendship. He says, in a perfect friendship, this appreciative love is, I think, often so great and so firmly based that each member of the circle feels in his secret heart humbled before the rest. Sometimes he wonders what he is doing there among his betters. He is lucky beyond desert to be in such company, especially when the whole group is together, each bringing out all that is best, wisest, or funniest in all the others. Those are the golden sessions. When 4 or 5 of us, after a hard day's walk, have come to our inn, when our slippers are on, our feet spread out toward the blaze, our drinks at our elbows, when the whole world and something beyond the world opens itself to our minds as we talk, and no one has any claim on or any responsibility for another, but all are free men and equals, as if we had first met an hour ago, while at the same time an affection mellowed by the years enfolds us. Life, natural life, has no better gift to give. Who could have deserved it all? Isn't that great? This picture of like the gift of friendship, one of God's greatest gifts that he gives to us. This sense of connectedness, this sense of standing side by side with another. Lewis is going to say in The Four Laws, this is a reason to stay where you are because the gift of friendship and the connection. Brené in her talk, what she shares, because it's a talk on vulnerability, is really good. She is going to say in there, really the heart of it, is that what keeps us from connection is the fact that with vulnerability is connected our guilt and our shame. And that for most of us to enter into that place of vulnerability is to enter into a place of excruciating suffering. We come to our wounds, we come to that place where we feel our deepest embarrassments, our greatest unworthiness. And so our way of coping with this is to withdraw, to protect ourselves, to blame others, to try to control our environments, to live a life perfect that cannot be criticized. We medicate it, right, with substance, but the problem is there's no selective medication. And so we medicate our pain and at the same time medicate our joy. We medicate our hurts and at the same time medicate our ability to enter into deep and meaningful relationship. And so we live in this world that is deeply medicated, deeply disconnected, that can just sit there and text message and that's it, right? And what we're cutting ourselves off from is the abundant life. Jesus is saying that is what you're called to. I came to give you life, an abundant life. But we also know that that is the way of love and is therefore the way of suffering. To enter into that sort of life is to enter into a place of vulnerability. She says something that I think is so great in this talk, that she's, because she's a researcher and she's amassing all this research, all these stories. And she realizes that there's this sort of core of people that she calls the wholehearted. And she says the wholehearted, the ones that are able to embrace life, are the ones that feel like at that central place that that person laid bare is worthy of love. And she throws that out without any sort of methodology in how to get there. But I thought, my goodness, how biblical. That what we suffer from is disconnection. And at its root is this fear that who we are is not worthy of love. That we have come, that we have a God that has come with, for the purpose of reconciliation, with a message of love, with a way back. That that is the thing that we're longing for. Hear from Lewis, to love it all. Do you have that quote? To love it at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. In our passage today, as we go through this list, kind of the credits of 2 Timothy, I think we see a brokenhearted Paul. Paul talks about suffering in prison and he sort of shrugs his shoulders. He talks about being misunderstood. He talks about suffering abuse. And he goes, ah, this light and momentary affliction. But as he starts to recount relationships, I think we see a heart suffering in its disconnection. And yet we see, I think, a beautiful psalm that he's writing. And I love this about the Psalms. David speaks so honestly in the Psalms. And he's like, God, break my enemy's teeth. But what you see as David writes is God ministering and speaking. And generally by the end, he's landed at this place of peace and security and stability and finding God in the midst. We're going to read our passage for today and see if you hear the psalm in this. This is 2 Timothy chapter 4. And it's going to be verses 9 through 22. He says this, do your best, Timothy, to come to me soon. For Demas, in love with the present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia. Luke alone is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, for he is very useful to me for ministry. Tychicus I have sent to Ephesus. When you come, bring the cloak that I left with Carpus at Troas. Also the books, and above all the parchments. Alexander the coppersmith did me great harm. The Lord will repay him according to his deeds. Beware of him yourself, for he is strongly opposed to our message. At my first defense, no one came to stand by me, but all deserted me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me so that through me the message might be fully proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it. So I was rescued from the lion's mouth. The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and bring me safely into his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen. Greet Priscilla and Aquila and the household of Onesiphorus. Erastus remained at Corinth, and I left Trophimus, who was ill, at Miletus. Do your best to come before winter. Eubulus sends his greetings to you, as do Pudens and Linus and Claudia and all the brothers. The Lord be with your spirit. Grace be with you. Now, I mentioned Paul's heart, and I think you hear it right from the get-go. He's saying, Timothy, come soon. And we've heard at the beginning of this heartfelt connection between these two and the tears that he expresses at the parting between Paul and Timothy. I was thinking about this recently. I was at a birthday party that my son was attending, and there was a pastor there, Mike Erie, who used to be at Rock Harbor, is now at Fullerton. And this party was for my friend Billy Tarka, who used to be here and was kind of our interim worship leader for us. And we were on the elder board, and many of you know him well. And he said, hey, thanks for Billy, because Billy's working at Mike's church now. And I felt like all of a sudden this, like choked up for just a second. And then I hit it because I don't want to be vulnerable. But just kidding. But I thought, oh, yeah, I miss my friend. And I think life is like this, where we have natural transitions, natural separations. It's just part of it. And it made me think what a gift it was to do ministry with Billy for a while and the separation that comes. I think there's just a great little window of insight there from Paul where he's saying, value what you have right now. Value those sitting around you. Because we don't know where life may pull us apart. And that it's for a time. And that friendship is a gift and we treasure it. And we treasure that closeness while we have it. But saying goodbye, parting ways, sometimes that happens here as Crescens is going to Galatia and Titus to Dalmatia. Like, life pulls us in our different directions. I think some of that longing and the sadness that comes with parting is a little bit of a longing for heaven. And that's good. But remember, like, be thankful for those sitting next to you. Be thankful for what we have. He talks here about Demas being in love with the world and giving up. And I wonder if this broke Paul's heart more than anything. Demas is mentioned in others, in Colossians he's in there. And he was one of the team, and he got taken out. Something caught his eye, or he longed for something else, and pretty soon he was out of the game. And we know from Paul's earlier ministry that he didn't have time really for this. This was a hard thing for Paul. In fact, it made him so mad when Mark turned back that he said, I'll have nothing to do with Mark. Barnabas was the one who stood by Mark. Mark, probably the author of the Gospel of Mark. And Paul said, fine, I don't want anything to do with either of you. And went off on his own way, and there was a parting of company. Which is what I think is so cool about the fact that Mark's name is mentioned there in verse 11. Because this is something where I think I see growth in Paul. That as much as he was hurt and was wounded, and as difficult as that was for Paul when people turned back, that his relationship with Mark, that he was able to hope again and trust again in Mark, and that Mark had proven worthy for that. I think it's funny where he says, Luke alone is with me. And, it kind of, you hear him kind of going, well, at least Luke's here. And the funny thing is, Luke is probably writing this. You know, you can see him go like, hey, man, come right here. At least Luke's still here. But Luke, who wrote the Gospel of Luke, was kind of one of the historians. I mean, thank God for Luke and the work that he did. Because I think we have Luke and Acts together. It's just a beautiful history of the church and what took place. But Luke went from being an interviewer to being an eyewitness and traveling. And we see him here with Paul right at the end, probably the ones that is writing these words. In fact, people speculate there's a certain vocabulary in 2 Timothy that sounds a little bit more like Luke than Paul in places. And they think that Luke may have had the freedom from Paul to embellish a little bit here and there. But I love that. You see just the history and the richness of these people. These are real lives. This isn't something being sort of objectively written out there. It's something that is tied into our stories, into our people. I like how it says in there, Tychicus, I've sent to Ephesus, and he's saying, can you bring me that cloak because winter is coming? It's like, I need that heavy jacket and also pick up my parchments and books. These were probably copies of scripture that Paul held on to that he had maybe loaned to Timothy. And he's like, dude, give me my books back. You've had them long enough. But these would have been precious, and this is a resource that Paul probably had entrusted to Timothy, where he's saying, I need those back, you know, bring those with you. Tychicus is probably going to Ephesus to get Timothy and to come back with him. So Tychicus is probably the bearer of that message. He talks in there about Alexander the coppersmith. And it's interesting, you know, you think of the desertion of John Mark and how that's repaid, and you think of Demas who's turned around and he's failed, which there's a warning in that for us as well, to not lose sight, not get distracted from our task. But Alexander is an interesting name in that list. And Alexander clearly is somebody who has deeply wounded Paul. In fact, when he's later praying and he's talking about God rescuing him from the evil deeds, certainly Alexander is one of the places he's pointing. This betrayal is a deep one. And Alexander the coppersmith, this could have been, you know, I mean, in our Bible study upstairs, we have like three different Bretts that come to that Bible study, right? So we don't know that Alexander is that Alexander, but in 1 Timothy, he mentions in Alexander that Paul says, I've handed over Satan to Satan, with the hope that he would be brought back into the fold. And some people speculate with the time between 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy that he was brought back, only to fall again. And you see there in this, as we're talking about connection, not only are we talking about Paul's deep love for Timothy, but we're talking about the disappointments that come from people that fail us, and now going as far as people that even betray us. People that we've hoped in once again, only to realize that they've let us down again. And betrayal is a deep, deep thing. God, I remember like the goofiest story, but when I was a kid, freshman year, this girl Sharon liked me, and she was like a couple, you know, like leagues out, like way out of my league. But man, this girl liked me, and I was so flattered, and I didn't drive, so what am I going to do? But my friend Tom drove, so Tom, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Because you can tell this isn't going to end well. But we went out on a few dates, the three of us, Tom driving, chauffeur, and me and Sharon, and then one day I couldn't go, and just they went, and 2 weeks later, which is kind of a normal high school romance, I was out. And you know, honestly, my friendship with Tom never, ever regained any sort of substance to it. As a kid there, the betrayal was so deep. And I was so embarrassed and so wounded. And as silly as that is, those betrayals, you know, Jay asked us last week to, you know, what would your final charge be? I think a list like this invites us to fill in the blanks. Who are those friends that we treasure? Who are those ones who have let us down? Who have those ones been those ones who we've trusted again only to be hurt again? Who have those been those ones who have made that vulnerability, made us withdraw and protect and guard ourselves? Because I think in all of it, these relationships become like critical in us experiencing life in order for us to heal and experience the abundant life that God has given us. Forgiving those that, who have let us down. Releasing them from the responsibility. You know, he says in there as he's talking about at his first defense, everybody deserted him. My heart just goes out to Paul in that. You think of the loneliness that he must have experienced in that moment. And this is thought to be maybe one of his first defenses. You know, as he talks about being saved from the lions, we don't know how literally to take that. That could be just a reference to Rome and what was going on there. But what we see is that it became an opportunity. And there, in all of that loneliness, Paul was able to preach the gospel to the Gentiles, maybe in front of a courtroom, as he gives his appeal, presents what God has done. But that all has deserted me. It makes me think, we live in a world where I feel like people feel that so poignantly. I think that Facebook only turns the volume up on this. They're talking about how so many kids now are bringing to their therapist and their counselor the disconnection they feel from going online and realizing all that's going on that they haven't been invited to. And to think this disconnection, this suffering, gosh, how wounding it could be. And how this preys on that sense of our worthiness and of who we are. Which is why I think this prayer from Paul right here is so profound. As he says, may it not be charged against them, but the Lord stood by me and strengthened me so that through me the message might be fully proclaimed. And I love that picture there. And I think that this is a key insight to us as we're thinking about how we navigate through life, as we think about the heartache that we've experienced and the deepest wounds being connected probably to the relationships from within, right? These are not relationships he's listing from without. These are the wounds and suffering experienced from those closest. As we think about this wounded heart, this vulnerable heart there that's seeking to forgive, what you find is God meeting Paul right there. And this to me is the critical piece. As I hear Brené talking about life is made for connection, this is true. But none of these relationships listed here can bring that connection that we seek. In Isaiah, it says, behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, or his ear dull that it cannot hear. But your iniquities have made a separation between you and your God, and your sins have hidden his face from you so that he does not hear. This idea that this is what sin has done, it's created this disconnection right at our heart, that the wound we experience, all these other feelings of our unworthiness are pushing us straight toward that deep disconnection. And this is the thing when Paul says we've been given a ministry of reconciliation. It's a ministry of reconnecting men's hearts, men's and women's hearts to God. I've told you about this story, well, beginning with how I peaked in sixth grade because I was voted the king of fun day. And that was like the big deal in sixth grade. And my life really has not, I haven't achieved anything much greater than that since. But that how I moved that year in seventh grade was the loneliest probably year of my life. And I've talked to you before about the pain of like eating lunch by myself, going from having a million friends to having no friends. And I want to tell you a story that just happened with my spiritual director last week because I think this is helpful. At least it was deeply helpful to me. Is that I realized as I was talking to her that it wasn't the loneliness from friends that I found so deeply wounding in that time. And I think this was some of this, the transition into adolescence. But the fact that I think at that point in my life, I felt a disconnection from my own family like I had never experienced before. And in a place of woundedness, I think there was probably a helplessness on the part of my parents, but because of that, there was a lack of emotional engagement. And what I experienced at that time was a deep feeling of unbelonging. And that wound, gosh, went so deep. And to think, I don't know if there's deeper wounds than when it's our family, which is why I think that all of us, I'm sure, sit in here bearing some scars, some wounds from that. And Lynn, my director, she asked me the question that you always ask in spiritual direction. Jeff, where was God there? I joke that I'm going to make an app, a spiritual direction app, and it just asks you that question when you hit the button. Where is God in this situation? Because we forget. We get so caught up in the wound or in the disconnection or the emotions or the lack of emotions and we're trying to process it in our brain that we sometimes forget that God is there. But she asked me, did God do anything for you in that time? And I said, oh my goodness, he did. And I realized I've told you about this moment of comfort that I received from God during that time by opening up the scriptures as a little 12-year-old, feeling God come minister to me in a profound way. But in light of all this and what we're talking about, all of a sudden I think I could hear for the first time God speaking to that kid that felt like he didn't belong anywhere, and God saying, you belong to me, right? You are my beloved son. And you see what is so radical about that, like circumstances just fade, right? Wounds seem trivial, right? I mean, where is there a deeper longing than right there? Those words of God, you are my beloved. I'm so proud of you. I want you to be just who I made you to be. Right? Pour your life out on other people. Give generously. And all of a sudden you're going, oh, like the fullness that gives. And here's Paul in prison, in Rome, in his final moments. And he's going, God is with me. All shall be well. And my goodness, that is right at the heart of this for us and the deepest promise in all of this. The connection that we long for. This is the connection that makes all other connections possible. As John writes, we love because he first loved us. We're going to have, in just a second, we're going to sing a song just as an opportunity for us to reflect on that. If you would like prayer, our ministry team will be down here. And go ahead, Mo, if you want to come up. But as they're coming up, I just want to read just a few of these verses from Psalm 139. It says, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down, when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Where shall I go from your spirit, or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. Amen.